held visibility virtually unlimited over the U.S. markets this week. Silver and the XAU closed at the highest points in nearly a year. AG adding $1.06% for the week, while the Dow Jones Industrials added over 300 points. Well, welcome back to Gold Seek Radio, everyone. Your host, Chris Waltzek. We've got another Big Four guest encore show. Dr. Burton Malkiel from Princeton University returns to the show with his outlook on the markets. Then Dr. Mark Faber, widely respected economist and editor of Gloom Boom Doom Report. He expects the Fed to backpedal, which is good news for virtually every market, especially the precious metals. Then Marin Alexov, CEO of Roslyn Capital, expects the precious metals safe haven to be the place to be, advocating at least 20 to 30% for investors' portfolios. And America's Rich Dad rejoins the show, author of Second Chance for Your Money, Your Life, and Our World. He's convinced that gold has completed its bear market, which is why he's directing funds into the sector. Robert Ian wraps up with two encore installments this week. All new episode next week with Robert Ian and two new guests. Gold Seek Radio begins now with the first guest interview. Aaron Alexov of Roslyn Capital, CEO. Welcome back.
Well, thank you.
Start today with your outlook on the sector. You know, it's a new year. We've had several tough years. Some things are worth waiting for. Give us your outlook, please, on the precious metals.
Well, I've changed. My outlook has changed a little bit since the first 2 weeks here. With the talk now that, you know, recession might be looming and so forth, then you have to start thinking, is QE4, is that a possibility? Is the government going to step in? If that's a big if, but that's a big game changer for gold. And as an investor, if I'm going to look into gold, the last thing I want to do is be caught on this thing, because there's just no way of knowing. When the Fed has a meeting, they can just turn in 380 and go, you know what, we're going to raise it a quarter, we're going to lower it. So you need to, in my opinion, be protected before something like that happens, because I don't think anyone's going to, you know, announce that beforehand. So I'm watching this market closely. I did rebound today, but if the earning reports now they're saying is going to be weak, if the unemployment number starts going the other way again, you never know. They might actually start helping again.
So you're not going to take the Fed officials at their words, our policymakers, that we could see as much as 100 basis points increase, and it was just a one-and-done scenario at the Fed?
I don't think they're anticipating this kind of a correction worldwide. I mean, China's a big if. If that thing starts going south, if the U.S. follows, if the earning reports get worse and worse, because the punch bowl is gone. This is the first time in a long, long period with no free money. Now, valuations of companies become an issue. You have to actually look at the balance sheet. You have to start looking at are they actually making money. So investors are going to have to actually do diligence now to actually invest. So there's going to be way, way more volatile, because the free money to support all this is not there. So we don't know how this is going to react. And I'm sure the Fed is going to have to do whatever is necessary to make sure that this economy doesn't stall completely. Last thing they want to see is unemployment start spiking again and people start being laid off. And the last thing we need is another Lehman moment. So, yes, I don't think the Fed is 100% clear what's going to happen.
The spike up in yield certainly has investors on the edge of their seats. No one wants to see the junk bonds imploding. It definitely has been a sea change moment. If the economic conditions do deteriorate, I think it's really almost last resort. I mean, it's the Federal Reserve. And avoid the next Lehman or MF Global or who knows, Bear Stearns moment.
Absolutely. I mean, if you look at oil prices, they're almost below $30, right? How are they going to hit their 2% target with that going on? Two, where's all the money that everyone's supposed to be saving, supposed to put back into the economy? Why is not that happening? Consumer stocks are not doing well right now. The prediction for consumer for the companies, which is two-thirds of the economy, is not reflecting the big savings that everyone's supposed to have in gas. Bottom line, it doesn't matter if it's a dollar gas. There's no money. People just don't have the money, and that's what this is happening. When you take away the free money, which basically, in my opinion, is an illusion to begin with, next 2-3 months is going to be very volatile. And then put China on top of that thing, what's going to happen? I don't think anyone has real numbers from China. All you have to do is sit back and wait, and that's when you're going to have those 7, 8% drops in a day. So if I'm a gold guy out there, hey, diversification is everything. I mean, you shouldn't put all your eggs in one basket, but if you have 20% in gold or 30, whatever you feel comfortable with, hey, better safe than sorry, because this time around, I don't think you're going to have time to react much.
I like to hear a guest who's completely transparent. Jim Rogers, we just had him on the show, says the same thing as you. We don't know. We don't have a crystal ball. We do see some footprints. We see some fingerprints. Let's start increasing our portfolio exposure to the metals. And every time there's a sharp drop or a decline, you can actually use that as a buying opportunity. What do you think about the equities, the shares, and the precious metals? Are they starting to show a relative value?
Some of the mining companies I see today spiked. I don't know why, but I haven't really looked into it. But again, there's a price. The more of them consolidate, the more of them get off the market, the less they're going to produce. The prices will at some point hit a floor. And at that point, there's going to be buying opportunities for these guys. Again, that's not my area, but I think that especially the funds, the ETFs, is going to probably start benefiting. Because I look at more from a, regular guys, investors out there, is that you're doing the gold, you have 23%, and you have 70%. Percent of your money in.
Of course you want equities to do well, and if they do, great. But God forbid something should happen, that 20% will see, it will balance out that. It's not about, hey,
equities is not going to do well, I need to diversify completely, everything's falling apart. You still want equities to do well because that's the majority of your portfolio. Again, gold, in my opinion, is there for safety and security. If you can make some money along the line, great, but it's there for those big moments when you need it.
West Texas Intermediate crude testing 30. Who knows? Are we headed 25, 20? On the one hand, that's great for the consumer, as you mentioned, a huge component of the country. But on the other hand, it's tough on the S&P 500, which has energy components in that index. It can be challenging as well for the Midwest because of all the fracking interests that are being decimated by this drop in energy prices. So
trying to keep the price down. I keep hearing that the reason is to get the fracking guys out of business. But, at the same time, I think it's more to it. The demand is slowing down. There is no demand for it, like in China and so forth, because of their slowdown. So at the end of the day, yeah, the Saudis might try to get the frackers out and fight Russia on this to keep the oil as low as possible. But at the same time, I just don't see the demand either. Because if all the economies were booming like they're supposed to, or everyone's saying they will, then oil wouldn't be at $30. It's not possible. We've seen that before. It'll be $100 and so on. The U.S. wouldn't be at 1%, 2%. It will be at 7%, 8%.
If I see the energy level at around $20 area, I'm thinking long-term equity options, 2-3 years out.
Absolutely. At $15, $20. Remember back in the day, how can oil be $15, $20? And I think it's a lifetime opportunity at that point if it goes that down low, especially long-term. In my opinion, you cannot go wrong unless everything just implodes. But then you have the gold.
One of our guests pointed out recently, Nick Barashev, read all kinds of research and studies noting that gold, the yellow metal, holds up remarkably well during deflation. In fact, his information shows that it does better during deflation than inflation. But the reason for the concern and the misinformation, even disinformation and confusion, stems from the fact that gold does drop in dollar terms, in currency terms, but it drops by such a smaller factor than real estate and other commodities and paper assets that people forget to adjust it, not in terms of the currency, but relative to competing asset classes. And when you do that, wow, are you glad you have a lot of yellow metal during deflation.
I mean, gold did very, very well during deflation. It's always been the case, actually. There is a little bit of a misconception that, hey, gold pops when you have inflation. It does, because people are scared of losing the value of the dollar, purchasing power, basically. That's where they go to the metal. But again, your equities will go up, so will real estate, but it just buys less of goods. It's too much money chasing too few goods. So at the same time, even if you have gold, yes, it will work as long as you don't cash it out. It becomes more expensive to get it, but it gets you less. Gold has done really well for us during deflation for last. I mean, if you look at 8, 9, 10, that's all it was. We haven't had inflation in a long, long time. We can't even get to 2%. It goes down remarkably well. I mean, let's not forget, less than what, 2017, gold was what, $1,700? It's still up 20-30% since then.
Or go back to, you know, the dot-com implosion. Gold was around 250 an ounce.
Absolutely. So, I mean, gold in my opinion has this staircase. It goes up, it'll drop back, but it very rarely goes back to where it was, down to, say, $700-$600. I just don't see that happening. I think, what's his name, either Mark Faber or Roger said that we'll never see gold below 1,000 in our lifetime. I think he said it, I don't quote me on which, I think about 6-7 years ago. And that might be true. It's good for a lot of, it's also good for, from our point of view, for investors that are on the fence on gold, because, you know, I think anything below 1,000, a lot more people are going to feel more comfortable diversifying into gold, for sure.
You know, I mean, how could you miss the opportunity to pick up real sound money when there's so many question marks in the currency market? I mean, there's a lot of nervousness in the Eurozone with negative interest rates, the yuan, a competing reserve currency, according to the IMF.
They're also long. I mean, there's, you know, I go to conventions. I'm going now in February 4th to the Money Fair in Berlin. You know, there's a rumor the Chinese are saying, you know, they're doing yuan, and then they're going to peg it to gold to stabilize. It's a little far-fetched, but everyone's saying this is why they're so transparent now about how much they're buying, selling. They get a reserve currency, and then they're going to start moving to back it X amount percent by gold.
Wouldn't it be interesting to find out that they had tremendously more gold than they've reported? Talk about changing the whole global currency, just turn everything upside down. Yeah, because I think they've got something like 3,300 tons is what they're saying right now. But what if it was 10 times that or 5 times that? There's been considerable speculation. Gold flowing in through Hong Kong, and it's going into these unknown sources. I really wonder if it's not the People's Bank of China behind that.
I went to Hong Kong last year. You know, if you look at the physical gold market, I mean, I think U.S. is like 5% of the global market. Hong Kong is 25%. It's pandemonium over there. I mean, there's a whole different attitude when it comes to gold. They don't trust nothing but gold. And obviously, when you have such a volatility in the world, you don't know. If I'm Chinese, hey, we don't know the numbers. We don't know what's going to happen. It's more of a gambler attitude. So gold is something that they really see as a protection against their own currency, their own economies, because over there, no one trusts anyone. For them to actually move into backing this by gold one day, I don't think it's that far-fetched. It will definitely calm down the entire population there, I can tell you that.
Is there anything else you'd like to share with the listening audience today, anything in 2016 that they should have on their radar screen?
Just look at the economy. If it looks like it's going into recession, don't be surprised if the government steps in one more time here and changes course. And be ahead of it. I will not wait. I will be ahead of it.
Well, Marin Alexov, Roslyn Capital, CEO of the company there, and it'll be interesting to see how everything plays out this year.
It's going to be a very, very volatile year.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Here is your mining quiz for the day, compliments of GoldSeek. Which company has the largest undeveloped gold reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold. Now, which company has the largest undeveloped copper reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold again. Seabridge has more gold reserves than Kinross, Yamana, and Agnico Eagle. Last year alone, Seabridge added 515 million tons of new inferred resources containing nearly 6 million ounces of gold and more than 6 billion pounds of copper at their giant KSM project in British Columbia, Canada. Now they are drilling at KSM again with multiple rigs in a 25,000-meter program. Find out more by visiting www.seabridgegold.net. Traded on the NYSE, symbol SA, and the TSX, symbol SEA.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
Well, it's a pleasure to welcome back to the show the best-selling author of the Rich Dad, Poor Dad book series. Welcome back.
Thank you.
The beginning of a new year, you like to go on record sometimes with forecast prognostications, your outlook for the new year.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I wrote in my latest book, Second Chance, last year, a year ago. And I said the Euro or the European Union would come apart. I also said in 2000 that in 2016, the biggest stock market crash in history would occur. And in 2005, I predicted the real estate crash, which came in 2007.
What exactly led you to make the 2016 call on equities?
Well, that was based upon facts, not anything else. The 401k is flawed. It's called ERISA, E-R-I-S-A. Is that baby boomers, my generation, must start withdrawing funds in 2016 when they turn 70 and a half. So when people talk about the stock market, they're generally talking about capital gains or the stock market going up. Well, the market can't go up every year if baby boomers are pulling money out. And once people realize the flaw in the law, the 401k, then it makes no sense to keep your money in there for the long term. Investing for the long term in the stock market today could be the worst thing you could do.
Advisors always tell you to keep your money in the casino, don't they?
Of course. You know, like I've been listening to this Davos and all this stuff, and they're all saying everything's fine, don't worry, economy's strong.
The FOMC, we've got a meeting this week. They're not going to raise rates this week, but likely in March, you know, we're going to keep inching higher. Is that just a non-event, or do you think that will have a significant impact on the economy and the market?
I think the thing that most people don't watch is called the Plunge Protection Team, which came in with Reagan in 1987. And what happens is every time the market crashes, money mysteriously comes in and props it up. So to me, that's more interesting because, you know, last couple of weeks, the market's been down and like magic, money appears and the market goes back up again. And my only question to your listeners is how long can they keep going doing that? Because, it's, you know, Japan, the Prime Minister of Japan in Davos, Switzerland, just said we can just use QE. Well, it hasn't worked. You know, their market, their economy is still collapsing. It didn't work for Germany in 1923, I think. It doesn't work.
You talked about the Eurozone unraveling at the seams. Obviously, we're going to see some capital flows into the U.S. and particularly equities because their stock market has just been a disaster. Do you think that's what's helping keep U.S. equities afloat?
I'm sure it is, but I'm not really good in equities because I'm not a gambler, you know, and I don't like it when I can't control the asset itself. For example, when I have a piece of real estate, I control it. I know the real numbers to it. And when I look at a financial statement of, let's say, Apple, I really don't know what's going on. It's mirrors, you know. I think the good news for you guys, the old gold guys, is I'm back to buying gold again. I think we've bottomed. So if the currencies start coming down, which they are, then gold goes up. The dollar may not rally next to gold, but if I was holding euro right now, I'd be buying gold.
Gold can rise along with the dollar. We've seen that plenty of times in the past.
Well, I'm not even concerned about the up and down of gold, the price of gold. I just want to know how many ounces I've got. And so lately, you know, I don't buy ETFs and all that stuff because I don't control what they hold. So I have my secret vaults hidden away, and I have my gold there. Nobody knows them. But I'd rather have the real gold and real silver rather than IOUs, you know?
Yeah, as you say, you know, it's unencumbered. But also, you know, there's just too many ways for them to get their fingers on what you've worked a lifetime to save.
I look at gold as not money, but as an insurance policy against the stupidity and arrogance of our leaders who actually believe, you know, these intellectuals, you know, like throughout history, people have hated intellectuals because they actually think they're so smart they can control the economy. And that's what Bernanke did. That's what Paulson did. These intellectuals actually believe they're smarter than the economy, and they're not. So that's why I buy gold, because I'm not Republican or Democrat, but you know what I'm saying? It's not really a real person.
You talk about the potential bottom in the precious metals. It looks kind of positive. You know, we've had a 4 or 5 really rough years, silver dipping down to around $13 an ounce. You're not terribly worried about it, you know, if we saw some more downside, because frankly, who believes in the currency anyway? So what you really want to do is value your wealth in terms of ounces and not in terms of dollars. Is that a fair statement?
That's exactly it. And the further it goes down, the more ounces I buy. You know, it's a lot of people speak out against dollar cost averaging. But I like it when it's going down because every time I have a few extra dollars, I just buy gold. Why do I buy gold? Because I won't spend it.
Yeah, that's what Jim Rogers, you know, in Singapore and Mark Faber in Thailand are always telling us. You know, they love the lower prices because, it, as you say, it gives them a lower cost average.
Right. And then those guys who say gold is, you know, the barbaric relic and all this stuff. Well, that's their opinion. But most of those guys are what I call the intellectuals. You know, the guys who actually think their brains are more powerful than the ocean currents.
It's a good metaphor because it really is the tide that's brought them their wealth. And once again, they're confusing, i.e. the higher stock prices where everything's been led along by monetary easing, right, and low rates with these government policies.
That's like, I agree wholeheartedly. I was looking at pictures of this last storm that passed. And I saw Manaloking, New Jersey, you know, they're flooded again. And really, that's what we're looking at. I mean, all of us are looking at right now. This market is so manipulated. The question is, who has the power to continue to manipulate it? And I don't know of anybody. So that's why I like gold and silver.
You've been a big fan of real estate. You know, the Philadelphia Housing Index has plunged sharply. That tends to be a precursor of, you know, the Case-Shiller Index in the next few months. Do you see some good buying opportunities for the American consumer as far as housing goes?
You're always looking for a bargain, so prices going down is good. You know, I mean Case-Shiller are for consumers, if you know what I mean. It's Mr. and Mrs. New Jersey looking for a house. And what I'm looking for, apartment houses that REITs, REITs, are dumping. And right now, I don't know if you know, but apartment houses are the hottest things in the real estate market today. And Mr. and Mrs. New Jersey don't buy apartments. And, you know, I don't speculate on my house, you know, my residential property, because that's consumption. You know, when people say, oh, the value of my house went up, I said, that means you're a consumer. You're not an investor. You know, I don't really care what the price of my house is. I just like my house.
Back on track here a bit, you know, we're looking at 2016. Not a big fan of stocks. You've been on, you know, on the right side of that market for quite some time.
I got out fully in March. It was probably one of the smartest things I've done. You know, I didn't make any money, but I didn't lose much money. So that's really good.
That is solid. And, you know, the other way to look at it is people, you know, taking a longer-term perspective, picking up some precious metals, you get that diversification, you can sleep a little more soundly at night, and you also know that you're getting silver at 66% off, gold, you know, 40, 45% off the highs. So, you know, where's the risk there?
The risk is not having it. And that's why I'm laughing about Saturday Night Live, and I can't tell Fox from Saturday Night Live, because those guys are a bunch of cartoons up there now. And those are the guys you're going to count on for the economy. Give me a break. I mean, right now, I trust in gold, and I trust in silver. I don't trust the stock market. I don't trust the Fed. I don't trust our leaders. I don't trust the EU to stay apart, to not come apart. Yeah, Puerto Rico in serious trouble. I mean, how many other things have you got out there? And you look at the national debt, it's now $20 trillion. If you want to believe Saturday Night Live characters, then you just keep believing. But I'd rather have gold than silver.
Looks like we're going to have some better times ahead. Any other sectors or markets that you're watching closely?
Well, it's the same thing. I always focus on one or two things. Focus stands for follow one course until successful, FOCUS. I don't chase around. I understand the real estate market. I understand, you know, how many people are renting and how many people are not renting. That's what I understand. And as far as oil goes, you know, I invest in oil. I'm looking at oil again because oil at this level is really a good deal. But I don't invest in price. When I invest in oil, I get an 80% tax break day one. So I invest $1 million. I get a 32% return, $32,000 return almost instantly. So nothing to do with price. It has to do with focus. How much do you know? It's the same as gold and silver. The more you know and the less you trust our leaders, the more I like gold and silver. I don't trust our leaders. If you trust them, stay in the markets, you know, buy, hold, and pray.
You know, you talk about the crude oil, and even if we did drop another 20, 30, 50% or more, I mean, the risk to reward is just getting very enticing around the $30 area. I mean, it looks like a good portfolio addition here.
Well, there's something else I would like to caution people on is that there was a lot of countries going broke because of those prices. Saudi Arabia's in trouble. Russia's in trouble. The oil, you know, Nigeria's in trouble. Colombia. So when you look at that, you have to ask yourself, if I was Putin right now and my country's going broke, what am I going to do next? You start wars. You know, because Saudi Arabia, they want to take their Aramco public. Because why? Because they're going broke. You know, it's time to cash in. So I would not look so small term or, you know, minutia. Look at what's going on across the world. Russia will go broke at $30 a barrel. And if that happens, he's going to start a war. So that's going to be good for gold, silver, and oil.
When this happened, as oil was sliding, the ruble was shot through the roof. And anybody holding gold protected their purchasing power by something like 100, 150%.
The same thing happened in 1918, 1923 in Germany. The people that dumped the Reichsmark and moved it into Swiss francs made a fortune. The people that held Reichsmark got wiped out. So that's why they, you know, the old saying goes is that the pessimist in, you know, my friends who are Jewish, they always say the pessimist left Germany and moved to New York. That's what happens when you sit and hope and pray that your leaders are in charge of the show. The difference was the currency. You see, as long as they moved into dollars, my Jewish friends did well. The Jewish guys that hang on to the Reichsmark are wiped out. The point, as you and I know, the dollar is toxic. It's worse than the water of Flint, Michigan. The more dollars you hold, the more sick you get. And that's what's going on to the world economy. So that's why I would, if you're not in gold and silver, listen to this program. You may want to put your toe in and figure it out. But you get to look at the big picture, too. There's a lot of countries going broke now. How about pension plans like CalPERS, you know, the California Public Servants Pension? They don't have enough money to pay the baby boomers. They're going broke. Look at Yellow Cab just declared bankruptcy. You got to be kidding me. What's going on in the world is not just a matter of what you're holding on to. You got to pay it. Wake up and look at what's going on in the world. Japan's going down. China's going down. It really is a time to start looking bigger, not smaller. This price of oil is massive. There are whole countries going broke. Think about that.
So you think that implies we could get a big rebound in crude oil?
We're going to probably have some war. But when Russia can't pay its bills, it can't pay its, you know, its retirement, like most of these, you know, in Puerto Rico, it's the guys, and that's what's going on all over the world. That's why I mentioned CalPERS, you know, the California State Pension Plan and all that. The question is, can they afford to pay out what they owe the retirees? I don't think so. And so with that reason, I think we're very unstable, and I want to go to what's stable, which is gold and silver and oil. So that's how I look at it. You know, I don't look at apartment houses. I look at it as a place to live. You know, all those immigrants who are running from Syria across Europe right now, they'd give anything for a place to sleep right now.
That's exactly right. I mean, even a tent would be better than nothing.
Yeah, so low income, I'm basically, you know, low income housing. And guess what? A lot of people need low-income housing.
That's brilliant. And one other thing here to corroborate your thoughts on war. I noticed a few weeks ago the market was caving, but I was looking for stocks for, you know, my newsletter. One of the ones that stood out was Lockheed Martin. Every stock on my list was collapsing. High quality, blue chip, solid earnings growth. I mean, everything you want, a good, you know, evaluation. But Lockheed Martin holding up well as everything else is imploding. And that kind of makes one think maybe the war drums are about to start up again.
Well, it's called the military-industrial complex that in 1960 Eisenhower warned us of, that the business of America is war. As long as you understand that, there will be no peace. So war is very, very, very profitable.
Any parting comments for our listeners today?
Just watch Europe. You know, as I said, the euro is going to collapse. And when that happens, it's going to make gold more attractive, but also U.S. equities. And so I think the rush is going to, the big boom will be America, but I don't like to play that kind of stuff. I'd rather play what's kind of certain.
You want to hold on to, you know, something solid, something tangible, unencumbered, precious metals.
The reason I use debt and I don't use equities, you know, debt versus equity, I'm always using debt because debt's tax-free. And if you can understand that, you're a little bit wiser, because taxes will ultimately be your highest expense, ultimately. So anything I cannot pay taxes on, I'll look at. So oil, I'll pay no tax. Debt, I'll pay no tax. I love that.
Anything in particular you'd like to share with the listeners today? You'd like to direct them maybe over to Amazon.com?
I would read my latest book, Second Chance, because in there you'll see graphs and pictures of what's going on in the economy today. And a picture is worth a thousand words, but unfortunately, they're in political times, there's millions of words and no pictures. Just look at my book, Second Chance, and these are government charts, and you can tell, you can see what's really happening, and then you can say to yourself, I need to do something different. For example, people talk about the great crash of 1929. If you look at my book, Second Chance, you'll see that the great crash of 29 was not a, in the first 10 years of this century, we've had three major, major crashes. Two were Wall Street, one was real estate. A bigger crash is coming now. So that's why you should take a look at Second Chance and then make your own mind up.
Second Chance, you've got to get some copies at Amazon.com and over at the Rich Dad websites as well. Robert Kiyosaki, it's always a pleasure, sir. Thanks for your thoughts.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Here is your mining quiz for the day, compliments of GoldSeek. Which company has the largest undeveloped gold reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold. Now, which company has the largest undeveloped copper reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold again. Seabridge has more gold reserves than Kinross, Yamana, and Agnico Eagle. Last year alone, Seabridge added 515 million tons of new inferred resources containing nearly 6 million ounces of gold and more than 6 billion pounds of copper at their giant KSM project in British Columbia, Canada. Now they are drilling at KSM again with multiple rigs in a 25,000-meter program. Find out more by visiting www.seabridgegold.net. Traded on the NYSE, symbol SA, and the TSX, symbol SEA.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
Well, James Turk, founder of GoldMoney.com, author of The Coming Collapse of the Dollar and How to Profit from It, as well as additional tomes. Welcome back, James Turk.
Thanks, Chris. It's great to be with you.
Thank you. Maybe we could start off today with market volatility. I think that's really putting it nicely. And certainly an increase in unexpected moves, and not only in the currencies, equities, China's stock exchange at the Shanghai Index. Really, I think the model for almost 1987 style meltdown. Can you give us an idea, an overview of what you see happening and, you know, maybe any of the fundamental drivers that might be underpinning this volatility?
Yeah, I think the volatility comes because of the level of debt that we're seeing throughout the global economy, you know, at the government level, corporate level, and even at the individual level. There's just too much debt. When you have that debt, the volatility is a consequence. Instead of, you know, relying on savings, money is being created out of thin air in order to perpetuate a system that's become unsustainable. The only reason why the debt crisis hasn't been more severe is simply because interest rates are much lower than what would be a normal rate. You know, interest rates are below the inflation rate instead of above the inflation rate. So if you put money in a bank and you deposit it for a year, the interest income you earn is less than the inflation rate, so you're losing purchasing power. I think as a consequence of what we're seeing now, Chris, in terms of stock markets, you know, gyrating all over the place, that we're probably going into a 2008 type situation. And this is probably going to play itself out over the next several months.
Well, speaking of playing out over the next several weeks to months, September 16th, about 2 weeks from today, we haven't had a rate increase, as I understand it, from approximately 2006, approaching a decade. There's a lot of ambiguity here. On the one hand, I have a number of guests who are adamantly convinced that there will be no rate hike whatsoever. And then on the other hand, there's those who oppose the thought and their thought and think, well, rates are going to move much higher. I'd like your thoughts on whether or not you think we will see a quarter point rate hike in September and perhaps another rate hike in December, whether or not the markets have discounted this as they usually do, and if that will be two and done, and we move on from there.
You know, the Federal Reserve has boxed itself into a corner. If rates were going to go up, they should have gone up long ago. You remember Bernanke was telling us that when the unemployment rate dropped below 6.5%, he raised rates. Well, that hurdle was passed long, long time ago, and they never raised rates. The reason why they don't raise rates is because the U.S. government cannot afford to pay a fair rate of interest. This is a point that I've been making for quite some time. So all you're seeing from the Federal Reserve is propaganda. Now, the Federal Reserve credibility has been basically destroyed by not raising rates already. As a consequence, they may try to raise interest rates an eighth or a quarter of a point to try to regain that credibility. But if they do, I think the markets are just going to react negatively to that rate increase, because the markets now are not expecting any rate increase this year. So I think it's going to be more of the same, or the Fed's going to try to do more of the same. But as I say, they've boxed themselves in.
I've been on record now for 6 months convinced, just from reading sort of between the lines, the rhetoric stemming from Fed officials, for instance, the Jackson Hole meeting, James Bullard's comments last week, and several of the other Fed heads have just convinced me. And I know there's going to be lots of listeners hearing our voices saying, who cares what the Fed's going to do? They're just along for the ride. But they still have a pretty solid howitzer. We just all need to keep that in mind. All right, we mentioned briefly currency volatility. Clearly, the U.S. dollar, the greenback, has been remarkably strong for a year. Does a year a trend make? Is this a flash in the pan? Or are we looking at a new sustainable theme in the U.S. dollar?
No, I don't think it is sustainable. What's happened is the U.S. dollar has been the choice simply because it's the least bad alternative. The euro, you know, has its problems, which are quite serious. British pound has problems. Japanese yen has problems. Chinese yuan has problems. You know, so where do you put your liquidity? People have moved into the U.S. dollar. The next big move is going to be when people understand that the U.S. dollar's got problems too, and that liquidity is going to go into the precious metals. And as we look toward the end of the year, I think we're going to see strength in the precious metals. You know, we've been in a basing pattern now for a couple of years, and so far attempts to break out of that base have been turned down. But we have an important divergence that's formed. You know, silver went to a new low in August, and gold did not confirm. Usually that's a signal when you get divergences like that, that the markets are ready to reverse course. So I'm pretty optimistic here looking toward the end of the year that I think we're going to see both precious metals, both gold and silver, move higher. And my expectation would be that silver will lead simply because it's the cheaper of the two precious metals. It's more undervalued than gold. Even though gold is undervalued, silver is even more undervalued.
You know, that's interesting, because I don't know that we could really say the beginning of the last bull market in, let's say, 2001, really depends on what your metric is, in the precious metals, the 12-year gold rally. Can we really say that AG led the rally? I mean, from my perspective, what really garnered my attention following the internet bubble, I mean, I was looking around, is there going to be another bull market? And my eyes were fixed on the inverted head and shoulders, triple bottom, and the XAU. It really was the XAU. And I just thought, this is one of the most interesting basing patterns I have seen, and this thing is going to have legs. I would love to see the XAU show some relative strength juxtaposed against the underlying metals. Any thoughts?
Yeah, you know, the XAU is impacted quite a lot by the currency appreciation and the price of gold in different currencies. So, for example, the South African stocks have done generally better than the American stocks or the U.S. stocks because the price of gold has risen in South African rand terms, but has not really gone anywhere in terms of the U.S. dollar. So you're getting these cross currents in the XAU. But my view is that if both gold and silver move higher as we move toward the end of the year, the mining stocks will move higher as well, simply because the mining stocks, again, are extremely undervalued, particularly some of these major producers that are still paying dividends and generating good cash flow even at these price levels.
Last week we heard from the second in charge at the Fed, Stanley Fischer, one of the Fed governors, and he certainly, I think, indicated there there is some ambiguity among them. They're not all lined up. Not all the officials there, not all of our policymakers are convinced we need a rate hike. And I know we've already touched on this, but the GDP revision, you might recall, 2.3% up to 3.7% from the second quarter. That seems to indicate that economic conditions might be a touch more robust than our officials were anticipating. And in that environment, do you think that we might see a really solid buy opportunity, an unexpected capitulation moment across most markets, particularly equities, commodities, and whatnot?
Yeah, I think that there won't be capitulation in the stock market. But basically, what you're, in other words, I think you may continue to go lower if they do start raising rates. But you really have to focus on the dollar here. The Fed's got two alternatives. They either save the dollar or they trash the dollar. If they trash the dollar, the stock market in nominal dollar terms will rise. If they save the dollar, the stock market's going to fall. So we just have to watch very carefully what the Fed's ultimately going to do action-wise and what the impact that's going to have on the U.S. dollar. But remember, when you see these Fed pronouncements, they only tell you what they want you to hear. That may not necessarily be the whole truth. So you've got to look through the announcements, read between the lines, and actually see what the markets themselves are doing and just basically follow those trends. And right now, the trend in the stock market is clearly, it's clearly turned. But we've seen this before back in 2011, and we bounced to new highs, or we, made new highs. So let's just watch and see how it develops over the next couple of weeks.
Who knows exactly how things will play out, because we've watched some interesting, I think, policy changes from Beijing. The People's Bank of China obviously reversed course on its dollar accumulation, or, U.S. Treasury accumulation, and that $3.6 trillion in U.S. Treasuries, primarily in their national stockpile. Considerable selling going on, to approaching maybe even one-third to a half a trillion dollars of U.S. Treasuries. That has to be absorbed by the market. To me, the buyer of last resort is most likely the Federal Reserve.
Yeah, I agree. And if they're the buyer of last resort, that means they're going to trash the dollar. Yeah, you're raising a good point, because when times get tough, each country will act in its own best interests, regardless of what they may say to their neighbors. And what we're seeing here, times are tough in China, and as a consequence, they've been selling U.S. treasuries, and that's obviously going to have an impact. But so far, it's just been a trickle of selling by the treasuries. We'll see whether the Chinese stock markets continue to fall and whether or not the Chinese government's going to sell more treasuries to try to prop up stocks.
Well, I think on that note, we can wrap up today. Please tell people more about the services you provide at Gold Money, and if we can expect any more best-selling tomes.
Yeah, the last book, The Money Bubble, is, I think, still, even though it came out in 2014, is still very timely in terms of what it has to say, because it focuses on these points we've been discussing about the dollar, the money bubble, and what to do next, or what to do before it pops. So that's the latest book. Nothing else in the works, but you can also find my stuff at goldmoney.com, or, we're now part of Gold Money Incorporated, the Toronto listed company, and therefore bitgold.com.
We appreciate your thoughts. We'd like to hear from you again, especially after we finally see what the Federal Reserve does and just how that impacts the markets. Thank you.
Thanks, Chris.
Hey, Chris, this is Robert Ian with ConquerChange.com. Harkening back several weeks to the State of the Union address, the president indicated in no uncertain terms that anyone claiming America's economy is in decline is peddling fiction. This statement was picked up by many news outlets, but not supported with too many facts, or for that matter, any kind of significant or meaningful discussion on what ultimately will be one of the, if not the primary election driver, which is the economy. Remember, it's the economy, stupid. But we don't hear that term bandied about much by the mainstream media anymore. They might hurt someone's feelings by referring to them as stupid. In fact, they'd have to hurt a whole lot of feelings, because one subject that is conveniently absent in any detail from the grand sideshow we call the presidential debates is, in fact, a meaningful conversation about the economy. There's no facts, no figures, no context, no demonstration that any of the candidates understand, empathize, or have any kind of remote plan to address the challenges faced by tens of millions of Americans. Everyone was more concerned with Donald Trump's absence from the recent Republican debate and the estimated per-minute loss in advertising revenue for Fox News from $750,000 per minute to an estimated $150,000 per minute. When, for a lot of Americans, if they don't have health insurance in place by January 31st, a $695 tax penalty goes into effect for 2016. There's also the 50 million people on food stamps, the countless students with loan debt obligations and no job prospects coming out of college. There's also a laundry list of other skewed statistics, including unemployment and other official stats. But I'll refrain from revisiting those numbers, at least for this discussion. Otherwise, I might be labeled as peddling fiction in what will soon be 9 years of Goldseek commentaries. And in a move that will make things look good here in the U.S., at least for a while, the Bank of Japan, in a surprise decision, all of a sudden decided to push key interest rates into negative territory that some say could push the Federal Reserve to ease up on its plans to steadily raise interest rates in 2016. I've said it before that the Fed would not, could not raise rates in a meaningful way in 2016. And lo and behold, just like a deck of TV magic cards, in a snap, we have a potential reason for the Fed not to raise rates again this year. Let's watch how this one plays out. And let's watch how the greatest sideshow, also known as the presidential debates, plays out as well. Because everything that seems to matter shouldn't. And everything they're trying to tell us doesn't matter should. The culling of America, the middle class, and the American dream has been underway for quite some time. Only you can rise above it. And only you can do something about it. And until next time, this is Robert Ian with ConquerChange.com, reminding you to follow us on Twitter at ConquerChange. Thanks, Chris.
The gold and silver mining sector is red hot. Every investment portfolio needs precious metal shares. GoldSeek.com's top stock analysts have done it again, identifying the next solid gold nugget opportunity, Brazil Resources. Based in the 8th largest economy with a mining-friendly reputation, almost 10 million ounces of gold reserves, industry insiders are accumulating shares of Brazil Resources. The notable management team includes Chairman Amir Adnani, a rising star in the mining industry with a reputation for moving projects rapidly into production. Fortune magazine lists Chairman Adnani in the prestigious list of 40 under 40 ones to watch. watch. Plus, shareholders benefit from the insights and backing of enigmatic Brazilian billionaire Mario Garnero, CEO of Brazil Invest Group, the nation's foremost merchant and investment bank, and founding director. Their São Jorge project is 100% owned with paved highway access, a nearby workforce, and a hydroelectric power source near the major gold deposits. Their next top project includes three deposits identified by major gold producers, plus their RIA project, which is a joint venture with Areva, benefits from a $10 million treasure map in the hottest address for uranium production in Canada. But the story gets even more exciting with their Whistler project, offering geographic diversification in South Central Alaska. To find out more about this unique opportunity, please direct your web browsers to BrazilResources.com. At Yahoo Finance, ticker symbol BRI.V. Remember to ride the exciting gold stock run of 2016 and beyond. Your portfolio will thank you for adding shares of Brazil Resources.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
Dr. Burton Malkiel, professor and senior economist at Princeton University, penned A Random Walk Down Wall Street and the 11th edition. Welcome back, professor.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be here.
Well, you've been on the show now for nearly a decade. Last year, you noted that the CAPE ratio, price to earnings, were just a bit extended. And, well, we're starting to see signs of that. Would you mind sharing your outlook for 2016?
Sure. I think that the U.S. market is certainly still quite expensive. This CAPE ratio is the price-earnings ratio where you try to normalize earnings by looking at average earnings over a long period of time rather than just the last year's earnings. But whether you do it with this so-called CAPE ratio, cyclically adjusted price earnings ratio, which is what CAPE stands for, or you just take the price earnings ratio based on the past 12 months, the U.S. market is not cheap. The question then for investors is, what do you do when everything is expensive? And I guess my advice would be that it just makes diversification even more important. While the CAPE ratio is something like 25 for the U.S. Other parts of the world are less expensive and less extended than the U.S. market. And I would say that if you look at your portfolio and you've nothing outside the United States, so I'm not saying that the U.S. market is necessarily going to go down in 2016. I think the economy looks in pretty darn good shape. So, I'm not predicting any catastrophe in the market, but we are very richly valued. Other markets are more moderately valued, and the U.S. Is only something like a half or less of the world economy. And my advice to investors is to think globally, and if you're completely undiversified in terms of foreign stocks, think of adding them.
As you pointed out, things are a bit extended, but, you know, then there's also Europe and Asia where rates are being held much lower. Fed governors, policymakers look like they're going to raise rates in probably another 100 basis points at least in the next year or so. At least that's what they're calling for in the Fed minutes, and we're seeing signs of that at the Fed funds futures rates. And some of that could be felt in the long bond, the treasuries. Or do you feel that diversification will just take care of that for us?
Well, I do agree with you that we're in the United States likely to be in an era of rising rates. Unlike the people who say, oh my, this is terrible, that means we don't want to be in any paper assets, I think that the rise in rates is going to be quite moderate. And I say that because, as you pointed out, rates are much lower in other parts of the world than they are in the United States. And inflation is essentially non-existent. We're in a world which has a lot of excess manufacturing, particularly in emerging markets. China has an enormous amount of excess manufacturing capacity, and the same is true in many other emerging market countries. This, I think, is going to keep a lid on inflation, and I think is going to keep a lid on rates. Rates may rise, but I don't expect them to rise very much and very rapidly. We've already seen the Federal Reserve has done the first increase in the short-term rate. Lo and behold, the long-term rate is even lower than it was when the Federal Reserve nudged interest rates, short-term interest rates up. So, yes, I think there'll be a modest increase in interest rates, but I think it will be very modest and will not mean that we should simply get rid of all of our paper assets.
Nothing succeeds like success. 1.5 million plus copies sold of A Random Walk. You know, I try to tell folks who are outside of the field, I think it's difficult for biologists, chemists, people who work in fields where scientific tests are more, you might say, rigorous. The outcomes are more predictable. They can be easily replicated. Markets, however, and the economy, for the most part, are based on human emotions, greed and fear.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what you, that's precisely what you can't predict. And there are waves of over-optimism and sometimes waves of too much pessimism. And it's very, very difficult to predict what people are going to do. And so you will never, never have the kind of precision in predicting markets that the physicist will have in predicting what particles are going to do. And that's simply a fact. We've got to accept that there's going to be a great deal of unpredictability in terms of markets. And that's what the idea of a random walk is, simply that the next move is not predictable by me, by you, or by any expert. So be very cautious of the people who will tell you, well, I know for certain what the markets are going to do.
I think it's well said. And, you know, look at even Einstein, the founder of modern physics, couldn't wrap his mind around this idea of uncertainty at the quantum level, as you alluded to. Whereas Dirac and Schrodinger and so many others just said, look, we have to accept this. We have to embrace it. Led to this, you know, the great silicon and computer and information age, just embracing it instead of fighting it. So I think that's what investors really need to do with the random walk. They have to accept we can't outsmart the markets. And there are a few people who can, but they're going to have trouble over time, and the rare nugget like Warren Buffett, and he probably can't teach us what led to his success.
And now that he has a huge set of assets in Berkshire Hathaway, even recently, Berkshire Hathaway has not been outperforming the market. So, and interestingly enough, Buffett is the one who says now and actually put it in his will that he wants his heirs to just buy a simple index fund, which, of course, is what I've been arguing for a long time. You can now buy a fund that buys and holds all the stock in the market and charges as little as 1/20 of 1%. And that's, to me, still the very best investment advice. And period after period, that doesn't give you mediocre returns because you're paying way below average fees.
ETFs actually under fire right now by the SEC and other agencies that some of these fees and can be really exorbitant.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm not telling you that every ETF is a good investment. I'm talking about the broadest ETFs that are the entire market. One that I favor trades under the ticker symbol VTI. And its expense ratio is 5 basis points, which is 1/20 of 1%. But not all ETFs, just the very broad ones with the lowest expenses.
You can outperform the top investors, the top money managers, the hedge fund managers. Paulson shorted housing market through Goldman, did a fantastic job, made over $1 billion. He's had a very challenging time, which really makes one wonder whether or not it was his models or whether or not he just happened to be.
With luck. And basically, the hedge funds over the last few years have been underperforming general market. They have not produced as high rates of return as the general market. Again, as Warren Buffett says, the wise investor will just buy very broad-based index funds. And my advice is to do so not only for the U.S. market, for international markets as well.
Well, as we pick up a copy of the latest 11th edition, A Random Walk, today on Amazon.com as well as Barnes & Noble, local bookstores, give our listening audience an idea of some of the wisdom and what they should look forward to in the latest version.
Well, in the latest version, make very clear that very broad diversification is what is needed, and I will put down the kinds of exchange-traded funds that will fill the bill. As you pointed out, not all exchange-traded funds are necessarily good investments. But what I try to point out is how using the same low-cost index philosophy, you can get international stocks, you can get exposure to commercial real estate, you can get exposure to bonds, and I think you do some bonds in the portfolio. I also point out, and I think this is actually very important in this low interest rate environment, what an investor is going to be able to do to get income. We know that bank accounts give you no interest. We know that money funds give you no interest today. And so one of the investment suggestions in the 11th edition is you look very carefully at high dividend paying stocks as an income vehicle, and particularly the high dividend paying stocks that have shown an ability to grow their dividends over time. So one of the other things that I think is a particularly apt suggestion at the present time is to look carefully at those ETFs that will give you a healthy dividend yield, and a dividend yield that's likely to grow over time. Because I think this is particularly important, especially for retired people who are having a lot of trouble trying to find dividend and on which to live on. So there are specific suggestions on that kind of strategy, as well as what kinds of bond funds will at least provide some stable income over time.
Please have a wonderful new year.
Thank you very much, and all the best to you and your listeners.
Here is your mining quiz for the day, compliments of Gold Seek. Which company has the largest undeveloped gold reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold. Now, which company has the largest undeveloped copper reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold again. Seabridge has more gold reserves than Kinross, Yamana, and Agnico Eagle. Last year alone, Seabridge added 515 million tons of new inferred resources containing nearly 6 million ounces of gold and more than 6 billion pounds of copper at their giant KSM project in British Columbia, Canada. Now they are drilling at KSM again with multiple rigs in a 25,000-meter program. Find out more by visiting www.seabridgegold.net. Traded on the NYSE, symbol SA, and the TSX, symbol SEA.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
Welcome back to GoldSeek Radio.
Thank you very much.
Finally, after nearly a decade of holding rates at impossibly low levels, the Fed raised rates. Nevertheless, their counterparts in Europe and in other parts of the world are actually considering going further into negative territory. Do you see this as dollar supportive, and just what might it mean for the global currency world?
Well, I'm aware that just about anyone under the sun is so optimistic about the U.S. dollar. This is a view I do not necessarily share, because I do not expect the Fed to continue increasing rates. On the contrary, I think that sometimes in 2016, the Fed will again cut rates and more likely than not launch QE4.
QE4, I assume that would mean we'd be looking at further monetary easing plans, and we would see the purchase of mortgage-backed securities, credit default swaps, other derivatives, as well as treasuries to hold the market in place. There simply aren't enough buyers worldwide for the U.S. Treasury and for our toxic mortgage debt.
I think the economy is not very responsive any longer. And that applies to all countries in the world to expansionary monetary policies, because they've been practiced for so long. So the impact is now diminishing. And there are many factors aside from monetary policies and fiscal policies that have an impact on the economy. And my sense is that the way the stock market has behaved, where the average stock is down more than 20%, but the indices are still holding up because of just a few stocks, that this is actually quite reflective of the U.S. economy, where a few companies and a few sectors are still doing okay, but the majority of sectors and the majority of people, the median household, workers, the middle class, isn't doing well at all. So my view would be it's more likely that the U.S. will go into recession within the next 3 months, if we are not yet in a recession, because industrial production is already down. Exports are down. Imports are down. These are quite powerful indicators. Of course, then the government publishes figures about employment, but these are vastly distorted figures, because, say, if you have one job, you are fired, and then you take two part-time jobs, then statistically one job has been lost, but two have been created. So a lot of statistics are very questionable in the U.S.
You know, underemployment is certainly a big problem, as well as record levels of poverty, or at least near poverty, with approximately 50 million Americans accepting food stamps to help keep dinner on the table. We also have other leading indicators, economic indicators, that are flashing at least yellow. Manufacturing rollover heavily in the United States, which tends to precede a recession.
Yes, the signs are all there that unlike all the strategists and economists who a year predicted a strengthening U.S. economy, and the healing of the global economy, we have actually in most emerging markets already a recession or no growth or a very severe growth slowdown, with some sectors being in recession. All the economies in the world that depend on resources are basically in a recession. And in the U.S., and I wrote about this already 4 years ago, we have nowadays an economy and a social system that has a lot of resemblances to a banana republic.
We also have a bifurcated economy, I think you alluded to earlier. On the one hand, we see the Dallas Fed Manufacturing Index plunging to lows not seen in years, another leading indicator. But then on the other, we see the retail sector holding up surprisingly well. Strength in retail, could that be correlated to perhaps higher debt levels, giving us the illusion of strength in that sector?
Well, I mean, we have to analyze how well retail is holding up. Because if I look at all the retail stores in the U.S., the performance of their stocks has been horrible. Horrible, not just bad, but horrible. And now someone can come and say, well, this is due that people buy now online, and so the traditional retailers are all suffering and so forth. I don't buy this argument entirely. What has been strong in retailing and in consumption has been, for instance, auto sales. And auto sales have been driven largely by credit. We have now a car loan industry that is over $1 trillion, car loans. And what has also been strong are home improvement items. In other words, the Home Depots have done well. But this has also a lot to do with the fact that people don't buy homes anymore, but they improve their existing homes. Or parents, they need some new furniture for their siblings who will stay at home, can't afford an apartment anymore. So this is also a debatable statistic whether that is so healthy.
We also have had difficulty in the energy sector. West Texas Intermediate crude plunging into low 30s, perhaps on its way to the 20s. That is good for the consumer, the largest component of our domestic economy. But then, of course, you also have the difficulties that stem from the large number of energy sectors in the S&P 500 weighing heavily on that sector, and, of course, jobs as well. Any comments on the energy sector?
Well, I mean, this country with the largest industrial sector as a percent of GDP is South Korea. But the problem is that South Korea doesn't benefit much from falling commodity prices because their exports to commodity producers, including the Middle East, are larger than their exports to the EU and the US combined. So when the customers have less money, they also buy less from South Korea. And so net, the benefit actually is very, very minor or even negative. In the case of South Korea, December exports were down 13%. In the U.S., the consumer would be a prime beneficiary from low energy prices. Unfortunately, the U.S. has a president that found it necessary that for most people, insurance premiums are rising by 20, 30, 40% per annum at the present time. And, you know, for people who have a lot of money, say you make $1 million a year, it doesn't matter whether your health insurance premium goes up by 30%. But if you're a family of four and middle class, a working family, it makes a big difference. And if you have a car, yes, you benefit from lower oil prices, but if at the same time the tunnel fees, the toll roads, and the tolls at bridges all go up by double digits, it doesn't help you very much. So all these things have been offset to a large extent by extremely poor policies by the U.S. government.
the precious metals. A lot of aficionados in the audience here today. Higher rates ahead doesn't seem to bode too well for the metal, at least in the United States. But then with your forecast of perhaps Fed officials and policymakers having to backpedal, that might be the panacea that the precious metals bulls need.
Well, first of all, we had already a bear market in gold of more than 40% since September 2001. In other words, bear market is more than 4 years old. Gold, compared to other assets, to stocks, bonds, and most currencies, in my view, is not particularly expensive. And the gold shares have started to outperform other stocks. And so I'm actually quite optimistic for gold to perform better than the S&P and better than other indices in 2016. In fact, I think that sentiment has been so negative recently about gold and gold shares that there is a significant upside potential. That would be my view. I'm not sure it's good news, but good news, basically, for someone who wants to buy gold, would be for the gold price first to decline and provide a great buying opportunity, you understand? But I think already here, it's at a very attractive level. So I bought some additional gold. Of course, I always buy gold, but on this weakness in the last month, I increased my position.
With the shocking increase in yields, it certainly doesn't seem to bode well for the debt and bond sector. Of course, stocks under pressure worldwide with Chinese policymakers and officials putting the brakes, their Shanghai index at least, last week. You're obviously becoming a little more sanguine regarding the yellow metal. Do you see other interesting opportunities ahead in the commodities sector?
Yes. I mean, the same analysts who a year ago or 2 years ago were predicting oil to go to $150. Now they say it will go to $20. I don't know whether it will go to $20 or not, but my sense is that between this level and $20, the market is very inexpensive. And my view would be that we could have a sharp rebound. Maybe not. I mean, maybe, most likely not to new highs, but say to an equilibrium price of between, say, $40 and $60, maybe $70. So, yes, I think in the commodities complex, there are now opportunities. I have to say that for individuals, to play the commodity markets is not that simple. First of all, they need a futures account. And many people in the U.S., they don't want to have a futures account or they don't know how to open one. Then they buy ETFs, commodity ETFs. Commodity ETFs are just about the worst investment anyone can ever make because the rollover cost is far too high. So if a commodity, if you buy a commodity ETF and the commodity doesn't go up 30% in a year, you will probably lose money. Physical gold, the storage cost is relatively low and you can buy physical gold and you don't have to roll it over. So I would buy, if you really believe in a commodities rebound, my belief would be that precious metals would actually outperform other commodities.
And it also has the added benefits of avoiding rehypothecation and related issues that have come up all over the world, not to mention potential confiscation issues, margin-related problems, and just a time where regulations and policies are coming into place that I think the typical investor may not be prepared for. The middle class used to be the backbone, if you will, of societies in the Western world, and it really was the aspiration of the working classes that their progeny might reach the goal of the middle class. That was really the dream that drove, I think, so much of the economic, and still does today to some extent. But we've just seen at least erosion of the middle class in the United States, maybe not so much in China and other BRIC nations. Can you give tips to the American middle class listeners today to help improve their economic situation?
Well, when I look back at the 50s and 60s and how rich Americans were relative to the rest of the world, I'm talking here relative, American workers, they earned a lot of money. They could go to Europe on holidays and live in Europe far above the life standard of Europeans, because the dollar at the time was very strong. It bought over 4 Deutschmark and 4 Swiss francs, whereas now it buys exactly about 1 Swiss franc. So a lot of things have changed in the world. We have, in the Western world, not just in the U.S., a generation of people that will die poorer and earn less in real terms, inflation-adjusted, than their parents in the 50s and 60s. Whereas in emerging economies, I can say that in China, we didn't have a middle class 30 years ago. And if I measure, say, a middle class, a simple indicator would be how many people can go on holidays and how many people can buy a car and so forth. So in China, for instance, in the mid-80s, there were less than 5 million Chinese traveling overseas. They were not allowed. And then by year 2000, there were 10 million Chinese traveling overseas. And now there are 120 million Chinese traveling overseas every year. This shift in the balance of economic power, and it is, say, sad for me to see that the Western world has lost, relatively speaking, so much in such a brief period of time. And the only explanation I have for this loss in relative prosperity in such a short period of time are, and I can't use the word I would like to use, the government's idiotic policies and their interventions into free markets and with monetary policies that then lead to essentially an enrichment of few people, very few people, not 1%, 0.01%, and essentially an impoverishment of the majority of people. The media, they have been bought by the government, or their owners are bought by the government. They will always paint a nice picture of what is happening in the economy, because they just watch the stock market and they watch Wall Street and New York, that lives essentially from tourists, and the money printing that flows first into the financial sector. So, of course, there is the trickle-down effect in New York, but it hasn't really reached Main Street.
Perhaps you'd like to share with us a brief overview of your perspective on the year 2016, this new year.
Well, I think I mentioned before in interviews, I don't think the stock market will go up and that it will close lower and that we will drop between 20 and 40% from the May 2015 high, S&P 2134. However, I'm not the clairvoyant about what the Fed will do and other central banks. I think, as I mentioned in just now, that the Fed will embark on QE4, but to really have an impact and push markets to new highs, they will have to do a massive QE4. I would imagine in the order of $150 billion asset purchase every month. And whether politically that will be acceptable is debatable, because the elections are coming up.
Well, thanks again, Dr. Faber, for another excellent economic overview. We wish you an excellent 2016.
Thank you very much.
Hey, Chris, this is Robert Ian with CunkerChange.com. This would have been an easy one to predict. The Senate just passed an $80 billion debt and spending bill, creating what has been called a debt holiday over the next 2 years by providing about $40 billion in new spending for 2016 and 2017. The Republicrats, which is what some call the distinction without a difference that Republicans and Democrats have become, voted for this in the middle of the night. Republicans who voted for the additional monies rationalized the process by saying it was worth busting the caps in order to get the Pentagon more money at a time when the U.S. is fighting the war on terror. Rand Paul referred to it as an unholy alliance between the left and right. Where has he been? That unholy alliance has been in place and has been the unspoken, unacknowledged agenda ever since I first voted back in 1980. The president is happy because this deal will break the cycle of shutdowns and manufactured crises, as he called it, that the executive branch and Congress have been through the last few years. Most inside the Beltway are happy because everyone's hot-button issues are getting funded. Education, job training, research, entitlement programs, and national security. Everybody's a winner, and it all got passed in the middle of the night with a bill that was crafted less than a week ago. The U.S. is fortunate for now by having the global reserve currency because it can pay its bills with the printing of money out of thin air. Having that money loaned into existence, paying interest on said money, which is the real objective, despite rhetoric and claims to the contrary, and thus avoiding hard austerity decisions the likes of which have been foisted upon country after country who cannot print their way out of financial crises. The most austerity those in Washington have to deal with when they need to plug an $80 billion shortfall is which takeout restaurant will they need to order in from during the several days it took to craft the 144-page deal that was written late on Monday and submitted for a Senate vote at 3 a.m. on Friday. From inception to vote, the deal passed in less than 100 hours, which represents over $1 billion an hour in new spending during the period of time the deal was active. Put another way, the 144-page document represents over $550 million per page. Nice work if you can get it. Going forward, I hope you will take with a grain of salt all the rhetoric and discussion about budget cuts and debates on spending, because in large part they are nothing more than psychological misdirection. Focus groups and polling tell politicians what they should be saying, because they think it's what the voters want to hear. And they do want to hear it, because they believe it's what they're supposed to think and want. But when push comes to shove, many really don't want what they advocate in terms of cuts, especially when those cuts impact them. So in true form, our political leaders have once again lied to the people in order to give them and themselves another opportunity to kick the can down the road. Because let's face it, that's where everyone prefers the can to be located. The giant pretending game known as Washington politics will continue until it can't. It's these 3 o'clock in the morning votes when our elected officials revert to their true genetic north. Hard consequences have been avoided. And now the sweet nothings and sweet little lies will once again begin to get told. That is, until it's time to cast the next budget deal and spending cap vote. Oh, there might be a lot more argument and debate the next time. But even if there is, it will get resolved by printing the difference, since that's the only tool Congress and the Fed have in their toolbox. The one-trick pony rides again. All will proclaim victory now. But in the end, we will all lose. Chris, I'd like to urge all of our listeners to sign up for my email list at conquerchange.com. And if any of our listeners are ever involved in bringing in keynote speakers or entertainment for their companies or professional organizations, especially during this holiday season, please visit my companion website at robertian.com, where I have a new video posted with condensed highlights from my stage hypnosis show. And until next time, this is Robert Ian, reminding you to follow us on Twitter at Conquer Change. Thanks, Chris. Hey Chris, this is Robert Ian with ConquerChange.com. Houston, we have a problem. Washington, we have a problem. Name your city because wherever you live, we have a problem. Even if, especially if, your city, your business, your profession, your lifestyle per se has not yet officially been acknowledged as having problems. Those problems, those structural anomalies in the building blocks of your financial future are there. And even if you've done a tremendous job in planning and preparing for yourself and your family, the anticipated fallout from a massive financial reset will have ramifications that will shake you to the core of whatever level of preparedness you have attained. No matter where you are at, you must continue to analyze, critically analyze the rapid influx of new ideas and analyses thrust upon you each and every day. The New Year market sell-off has produced two distinct schools of thought that you will see represented in a combination of alternative and mainstream media analysts. Alternative analysts tend to be fiercely independent, often disagreeing with each other on many layers of an argument. They are much like overlapping circles. The circles overlap and have a commonality in the middle, with a variety of unique outlying perspectives that create niche opinions around a central theme. Mainstream media tends to consist of overlapping circles that have converged into a uniform or managed message that is broadcast to the masses for global consumption. Any unique outlying perspectives where the circles do not overlap, what I call acceptable parameters of debate, are managed and massaged for an official narrative. The current official narrative during this continual sell-off in the stock market is urging investors to stay the course and keep their money in the market for the long term. I don't see any headlines suggesting people convert any gains from this highly leveraged stock market into cash, never mind undervalued physical gold and silver. The mainstream pundits are leading with headlines that proclaim the bear market in stocks will be over before you know it. Others say much of the damage has already happened. If you believe that, do you have your own stop-loss number on the Dow? In other words, is there a certain level at which you will sell your portfolio, go into cash and take a wait-and-see approach? It may be a question worth considering, especially when you look at how many of the alternative media analysts are interpreting the market at the moment. From an overlapping circle perspective, those circles are converging for the worst, with many calling for the market to drop by up to half or more to align itself with reality. It is an ugly financial reality that is being described. Very few saw the 2008 collapse coming. The injection of liquidity from the dot-com bubble burst, the fallout from 9/11, and the subsequent housing pump and dump ran its course during the early 2000s and culminated in 2008. That crisis never really ended. It's had a tourniquet applied to the wound. The patient is still alive, but the market is telling us their arm may need to be amputated. It's a real mess. And unlike 2008, lots of analysts are warning us with specifics on what to do. But I'm afraid there is still a tremendous amount of denial that exists and remains, even from those who vividly remember the trauma of 2008 and 2009. Now is not the time to tune out uncomfortable messages. If you have recovered somewhat or completely, or were fortunate enough not to have been impacted by 2008, now is not the time to wait until everyone is headed for the exits, because the off-ramps are small, and there are too many vehicles. A lesson that will once again be painfully well learned by many people who may never have another opportunity to recover if the markets reach the full negative potential that many expect yet this year. Anticipate the future and act on it in advance. Chris David Morgan has invited me to speak at his Las Vegas Solutions Conference on February 22nd, along with Chris Martinson, Greg Mannarino, and a team of experts. Details are at conquerchange.com. And until next time, this is Robert Ian, reminding you to follow us on Twitter at ConquerChange. Thanks, Chris.
The gold and silver mining sector is red hot. Every investment portfolio needs precious metal shares. GoldSeek.com's top stock analysts have done it again, identifying the next solid gold nugget opportunity, Brazil Resources. Based in the eighth largest economy with a mining-friendly reputation, almost 10 million ounces of gold reserves, industry insiders are accumulating shares of Brazil Resources. The notable management team includes Chairman Amir Adnani, a rising star in the mining industry with a reputation for moving projects rapidly into production. Fortune magazine lists Chairman Adnani in the prestigious list of 40 under 40 ones to watch. Plus, shareholders benefit from the insights and backing of enigmatic Brazilian billionaire Mario Garneiro, CEO of Brazil Invest Group, the nation's foremost merchant and investment bank, and founding director. Their São Jorge project is 100% owned with paved highway access, a nearby workforce, and a hydroelectric power source near the major gold deposits. Their next top project includes three deposits identified by major gold producers, plus their RIA project, which is a joint venture with Areva, benefits from a $10 million treasure map in the hottest address for uranium production in Canada. But the story gets even more exciting with their Whistler project, offering geographic diversification in South Central Alaska. To find out more about this unique opportunity, please direct your web browsers to BrazilResources.com. At Yahoo Finance, ticker symbol BRI.V. Remember to ride the exciting gold stock run of 2016 and beyond. Your portfolio will thank you for adding shares of Brazil Resources.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.